Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are we today?
We're fine.
Excellent.
Fine. Now we had a close call. I couldn't find any headphones. So today's lesson is sometimes the basics are very important.
Yes. And being prepared isn't just about research.
No.
It's about knowing that your equipment is
and
handy.
Having the right equipment.
Yes. Okay.
Which is a good, leads us to today's topic.
Well, it does, because there's lots of elements to every sector that mm-hmm. anyone could possibly imagine being involved with. There's mm-hmm. more than just a few things that are factors, for sure. And we're talking about some of those factors today. But first, I want to ask you if you know one of my favorite forms of art.
What's your favorite form of art?
Okay, well, it's not my favorite form of art, but I really love it. It's up there in the top 10.
Ooh.
Pie charts. I love pie charts.
Yay,
pie charts.
Even pie charts made of actual pie.
Even better. That's even better. But I think that people who are very visual, like I am, we appreciate when information is broken down into those colorful, pretty geometric shapes. Mm-hmm. It helps us identify, it helps us absorb and remember the information.
Right, infographics.
Yeah.
It's very important.
It is important. Mm-hmm. So there is an art to demographics.
Yes, there is an art to demographics.
Yeah, so today's topic.
The art of demographics.
And this is almost like going to be a Louise show.
Oh.
I'll just sit here and nod.
No, don't be.
I'll go, uh-huh. Because this is your field. You're a marketer, mm-hmm. and you know how to find markets for products. That's what you're hired for.
Yes.
And so
generally speaking,
you are constantly doing research in this area.
Mm-hmm. I know people say, but I thought you were a designer. Well, I am a designer. I'm designing strategies to find the right market.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
There's a lot of numbers involved.
Yeah, so it's like the cross-section of art and math.
It is. I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I failed stats university.
Stats in university is a horrible, painful course.
And yet it's the basis of demographics. Go figure, right?
I know, but it's just, I think because your brain went numb.
Oh, right. Yeah. It took me 3 times.
Oh my God.
I took it and then I dropped it. Then the next time I took it and I failed it. And then the third time I took it and I passed it. So don't give up.
Okay.
And now I love stats.
Yeah. Well, and I think that you can learn to love them.
Yes.
But I think that I think the course to teach you how to make them and figure them out and sort them is painful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a friend who was in a statistics course when I spent a very short time at U of C.
Yes.
And he was not happy.
No.
Not happy. And he was a math guy.
Yeah.
Loved math.
No. Yeah, exactly.
So it wasn't necessarily a good scene.
No, there's all kinds of different math.
There is.
Yeah.
And I guess statistics are one of those things that you, there's always piles of information you have to sift through. You have to be good at sorting and categorizing and
summarize. And
Yeah.
No, it's very interesting. As I say now, it's like my favorite thing to do is to look up stuff on StatCan.
We'll be doing a little bit of that today.
Exactly. Which doesn't make me the funnest person at the...
You are the funnest person at a
barbecue.
Party because you do that postal code trick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Later, we're going to do a postal code trick.
That's
and
awesome.
Now for my next trick. No, it's true. I tell you, your postal code says a great deal about you. You might be surprised.
Yes, no kidding.
So demographics is basically the study of population by age, gender, income, geographic location, right? So it's pretty stuffy stuff.
Yeah. And there's other forms of demographics,
yes.
Like psychographics.
Psychographics, geodemographics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so psychographics is the study of population by values and lifestyle.
Right.
Based on their demographics.
Right.
And then geodemographics is the study of clusters or how people, segmented markets in teeny tiny neighborhoods or postal code areas. So,
right.
And they're all very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about Salmon Arm.
Oh, well, Salmon Arm is the average age in Salmon Arm is 48. And stats all by themselves are not much good unless you compare them to something else.
Right.
So the average age in Salmon Arm is 48. The average age nationwide is 40.
Oh.
So we are relatively older, mm-hmm. right? population then.
I'd say that's quite a bit older.
Yes, quite a bit older.
Yeah.
But then Fort St. John, the average age is 31, so they're quite a bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
So why that's important is because when you're spending municipal dollars or planning arts events or planning festivals, you have to know these things.
Yes.
And I bet you if you walked around and did like mic interviews with random people in the street, most people wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
Right? And so even people who organize events don't always think about that.
Oh,
so,
no, of course. Yeah. You just think, I got a great idea. Let's do this.
Yeah. So the other thing about Salmon Arm is our cost of living or housing is relatively lower.
Really?
Than the average, yeah.
I would have thought we were higher. It seems like house prices have always been like Vancouver prices, but, well, not Vancouver, but
Well, because
Calgary
of Vancouver,
prices.
Right? Because it's averaged out.
Right.
We also, our income level is relatively lower.
Mm-hmm.
Our employment is a bit high, or better. I guess there's better, worse. I mean, I don't really like using better and worse when it comes to numbers. It's usually higher or lower.
Yeah. That's the mathematical.
So our growth rate is higher. Mm-hmm. And our employment levels are higher than some communities on average.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's
so things are looking up.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad. Yeah.
And we're having the other thing that is important about demographics is often you'll hear on the news that the changing demographics of Canada. Well, we're not actually changing at all. It's not like suddenly there's a whole bunch of new, oh, look, all these people we didn't know were there or here. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Demographics don't change. The shift, the ages shift.
Right.
Right? So our demographic is aging, but it's not changing. So we knew this was coming.
Yeah.
And we've known for a very, very long time. Right?
So
you can stratify the population by age.
Right.
And the baby boomers are
getting
old.
Most baby boomers are a bulge in the population.
1945 to 1965.
It keeps going up. Do you find it goes up? Because I know that I'm very close to that.
You're close.
I'm a 67.
Yeah, so you're a Gen
Xer. I'm a Gen Xer.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed not that long ago, my husband, who's 1960, was also a Gen Xer. And then 60 was absorbed into the baby boomers, so he was a fringe baby boomer.
Yeah.
Now it's way up to 65.
I think what happens there is these terms get kind of usurped by other groups.
Mm.
But technically the baby boom was 20 years after World War II.
Right.
So 44 to 64.
Right.
And then from 64 to 84 is Xers.
Yeah.
And then now they're calling them Generation Z.
Well, because Generation Y.
Yeah,
was the late
Xers and then Y, and now the teens
and now
and
the
tweens
millennials
are Zeds.
Right.
Or millennials.
Yeah.
Right. And so basically, it comes down to little, and the 25 to 45 are the seniors. And so each of these groups behaves differently.
Right.
And within each of those groups are different behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the millennials are part of the Gen Z.
Yeah.
But not all Gen Zers are millennials.
Oh, interesting.
I think.
Why? What are some of the attributes?
Well, I think because millennials, it's more about they're changing values and lifestyle, so they're not as hung up on, say, owning.
Right.
They're more interested
in sharing. Yeah.
Right? So YouTube, Netflix, iTunes, Uber, Airbnb, you know, these are people who share.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily want to own a home or own a car.
Right.
Well, maybe not Uber. Nobody. It's not about cabs, but just car sharing and
the concept of the
sharing economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that, you know, for business, they need to realize that here comes the sharing economy.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah. So they have to build their business around being able to share rather than always selling a product, an end product.
Exactly. Whereas seniors, so my parents, it was all about owning a home, owning a car, not having any debt.
Yeah.
Right. And whereas our generation, I think we're more about owning stuff, but not quite paying for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Debt.
Right.
And then the tool thing, too. We were talking about that because our engineer listened to a thing about the share economy.
Yes.
Making
sheds. They're called make sheds and you can share tools.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Like all of these big expensive tools floating around in people's garages.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said the average power power drill was used for 30 minutes a year mm-hmm. in the average household. Mm-hmm. I mean, not our household, I can tell you, but most households. So why mm-hmm. isn't that being shared? I mean, it makes sense mm-hmm. to not have more stuff produced when right. we've got the ability to share it in the neighborhood, especially.
And I mean, I think it comes down to economics and scarcity and our propensity to become more and more efficient all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's how this generation is becoming more and more efficient. I mean, farmers from the 40s will tell you, well, duh, nothing new there.
Yeah.
One combine, everybody shares. Yeah. That's what it's called, the cooperative. Look yeah. it up, you know? And so it's not like there's anything new. It's just the level to which it's being adopted by different generations.
Right. Yeah. We've had a time of unbelievable abundance.
Yes.
Right? In mm-hmm. the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. early 90s. Mm-hmm. So we had the ability to each own our own private everything.
Yes.
But really it was not necessary. No. And it caused great debt. Mm-hmm. And now we've got too much stuff.
Yes. So we have to edit it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this generation is born to do it for us.
Yeah, right? And not too happy with us too, because we also borrowed a lot of money for shared resources like bridges and mm-hmm. roads and schools and yeah. and all of that money. Some of that money has to get paid back.
Yeah.
Actually, not all of it, because some of it we borrowed from ourselves, so that you don't have to worry about that money as much.
We borrowed from our future selves.
Yes. Yeah. But the money that we borrowed, say, from China.
Right. You know, not so good.
No, they might want that back. Maybe. In fact, I'm sure they do.
Someday.
At some point.
Yeah, with interest.
With interest, right? Yeah. And then the other thing about the shifting demographics is every year more and more baby boomers leave the working economy. Mm-hmm. And so their money's not going anywhere. You can't take your money with you. That part, people sometimes mistake that part. What the concern for government is when you leave the working economy, you're paying less and less tax.
Right.
But there are more and more of them, right? Yeah. So we're at like an upside down triangle. So there'll be fewer people at the bottom of the triangle in the working economy trying to support people at the top of the triangle. So that's why governments kind of freak out about stuff like healthcare and
yeah.
Transfer payments between the feds and the province. And
right. Well, it's something like there are seven workers to every one senior.
Yes.
And the anticipated numbers within 15 years is going to be four workers mm-hmm. for every senior. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people having to work harder to support people in that age group.
Or work the same and earn less. So see, that's where the sharing economy comes in, right? Because economics is like a big fish tank. The water just kind of flows back and forth. It's about finding where there's enough balance so all the fish can swim, I think. But
it's a good visual. I like it.
You like it? Very good.
I like my visuals.
So the other thing that we do in marketing, and we should be and are indeed doing at the Arts Center, is dividing out the demographics by where those demographics are in their own family life cycle.
Right.
Right. So unmarried young people behave differently than married young people. Mm-hmm. So there's some recognition that just because you're the same age, make the same amount of money, live in the same place, same gender, same education, doesn't necessarily mean you have the same value set or lifestyle. So,
right.
And a lot of times it's based on where you are in your family's life, whether you're single, married or divorced with young children, married or divorced with school-age children, married or divorced with non-dependent children, so once your kids move away.
Right.
And then when you're...
Which nowadays still might be dependent.
Could be, yeah. You could be a senior with... Yeah, so anyway.
With kids in your basement.
And then, once your spouses, when people are retired, and then when they're widowed. So those are different stages and people behave differently.
Right. There's been a lot of crossovers of art and such, right? Mm-hmm. Like art and science, like the ballet opera that's happening in the Large Hadron Collider. Have you heard about that?
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I have not heard about
that. Okay, that'll be next week. Okay. But just the mixing of art and other things.
Yes.
Because technically, art is everywhere.
Yes.
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about demographics and arts, we don't have to specifically say these are the numbers of artists and musicians and dancers in this profession earning this much. The whole thing is an art form.
Yeah. And it's about the intersections of those two, of who you are as a, you know, from a demographic point of view, and who you are as a interesting person point of view.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so where do they meet up? So one thing in when I teach marketing at the college, and at the first session, I always ask them to introduce themselves as people, like, who are you and what are you studying and what do you want to get out of this class and who do you want to be when you grow up? And then the next round, I say, okay, now introduce yourself from a demographic point of view.
Oh, fun.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you want to try?
Okay.
Okay.
This you is... go first because you okay. know.
My name is Louise. I am female. I am in the 45 to 54 demographic. I'm a grocery shopper. I'm a homeowner. I'm middle income, highly educated, relatively highly educated. It's not, you know, it's not a judgment call. Who's better educated, but
nobody car, said better. You know, we
right,
said higher.
Higher. That's yeah. right. Vehicle driver, radio listener, newspaper reader, right?
Yeah.
Arts participant.
Right.
Right. So middle or school age children. I live in a, I wouldn't say in a neighborhood. I don't, I'm not an urban dweller. I'm what's called an ex-urban. So I live outside of an urban area, but not a rural area.
Oh, okay.
So that's what Canoe is, ex-urban.
Okay.
So is Salmonar.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Self-employed, relatively low disposable income. Mm-hmm. Right. So these are all things that people who are trying to market to me need to know.
Right.
Yeah. Your turn.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Okay. I'm female.
Yes.
I am also in the 45 to 54 age demographic. I am married. I have school age children. I am a homeowner. That's like just 4 months old. And I'm a cultural worker.
Yes.
And I'm actually, I checked out my level of income against the characteristics of Canadian income.
Yes.
Factors.
Yes.
And I'm low income.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah. Not even lower middle. I'm
just low
income. Low. Yeah. But I think that's the art sector.
Yes.
In general.
Right.
What else? Yes. Newspaper reader, radio listener, mm-hmm. car driver, mm-hmm. one car family, single car owner. I guess our neighborhood would be ex-urban as well because mm-hmm. we're not downtown, but mm-hmm. we're not out in
and
the country.
And yet it's higher income then.
Yeah, my yeah. neighborhood is high power users.
Oh,
but we're not.
Yes,
we can compare now. I know that there are people out there that really are unhappy about the smart meters because of the Wi-Fi signal,
yes.
powerful Wi-Fi signals. But if you actually use the program, it's really quite interesting.
Really?
It shows
well, that's
you
interesting.
Yeah, what your power usage is on certain days at certain times, which is fascinating because apparently for us, pizza night's a high power user. And it also shows
oh,
you your
because
power
you make because you make your own pizza.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not a takeout food eater.
We're not a takeout. We're not a restaurant mm-hmm. people, except I am at work. Like mm-hmm. I eat out pretty much every day, mm-hmm. but I have a budget. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess we're, but as a family, we're not mm-hmm. eater outers.
Mm-hmm.
We also don't take big exotic vacations.
No.
No. We're kind of a Vancouver once a year kind
right.
of
and
people.
You don't shop at big box stores.
No, I'm an anti-big box store. Yeah. I shop at local grocery stores.
Yeah.
I shop
farmers,
local.
Yeah.
Yep. I shop locally for vegetables. I shop locally for product. Mm-hmm. I buy a lot of secondhand mm-hmm. things. I'm a thrift store shopper.
Yeah.
I don't travel out of town to shop,
mm-hmm.
except occasionally to Valley Village.
Well, who doesn't well, go to Valley Village?
Yeah.
But isn't that interesting? So now next time you get your market news, newspaper delivered to your door in your neighborhood, look at the flyers. Virtually none of them are of any use to you.
Yeah.
So they're taking a shotgun approach to marketing because it's cheap and plentiful. And yet it's
they're not hitting
it's
me.
Not targeted at all. I bet you they're not hitting many people in your neighborhood.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So it just, when you start thinking about things in terms of demographics, psychographics, geodemographics, suddenly the world, like these light bulbs go off and you think, what are you doing that for?
Yeah.
Boy, you're wasting your time on me, dude.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Yeah. So, but then, and it does also impact how we deliver community programming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just how we deliver flyers and how we buy butter.
Yeah.
It's also about how we develop a community.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's interesting because you're both, you and your partner work in the arts. And so it's low income, but you're in a high income neighborhood. So you're managing to achieve despite, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's very interesting.
Well, it is. I think it's because
you're going to value village.
Well, yeah. And I think it's a bit of the Gen Xer thing, right? Mm-hmm. The Gen Xers were really all about work-life balance. Mm-hmm. And they didn't prioritize work the way that the baby boomers did. Mm-hmm. And so it's like in my life, it seems to have resulted in a longer time it took longer to get to a place where lots of people got to in their 30s. Mm-hmm. But I think I had more fun in between.
Yeah. And you're there now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that we've had wonderful experiences, mm-hmm. and we've done lots of things, and I've got a great education, and mm-hmm. I feel like, well, what, that was worth it. Oh yeah. So that was the university education is kind of interesting because yes. there doesn't stop at that, right? Like, I thought when I was looking at demographics for artists, there's very interesting numbers about level of education mm-hmm. compared to earnings, compared to the rest of the labor force. But for university educated, like you said, the higher education, it doesn't even stop at a bachelor's degree. That's kind of low university education. Yeah. Then there's your master's and, of course, a PhD for mm-hmm. a lot of professions. But then beyond that, it's the teaching. Yes. Right? Teaching at the
second. Professional designation. Yeah. CAs, doctors, lawyers, teachers. Yeah.
So there's really a lot of levels of education. Mm-hmm. It's not just, it doesn't end at university educated.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but when you say that, so I think there's also level of income is tied to level of education, but there's also the time delay. So like I was in school for 10 years.
Yeah.
So compared to some of my peers, I'm about 10 years behind.
Yeah.
But I'm catching up.
Yeah, that's right? interesting. Well, yeah. That's what I find too, because lots of my peers, their kids are about 6 to 10 years older than my kids. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we just started later because
mm-hmm.
of that.
Because mm-hmm. you were in school and yeah. you were making ends meet.
And it took a while to pay down some of that debt.
Yeah, and it's momentum, right?
Yeah.
And this is true as you researched of many people who work in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I bet you there's a lot of parallels between small business owners and
probably
artists, because yeah. I think small business owners and artists have a lot more in common than.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Okay, can I give you some of the numbers?
Just would
because,
you please?
Just because I think it's
okay.
funny.
Yes,
it's not funny. It's kind of disturbing, mm-hmm. but we'll just go with that. So there are some great numbers from Hill Strategies. Yes. Hill Strategies has been doing some wonderful demographic studies for the arts sector for a few years now, which is so helpful because there mm-hmm. was no numbers up until 10 years ago
no.
on how the arts sector affected the economy as a whole.
Or there were numbers, but they weren't applied this way because the numbers are there.
Well, the numbers.
Right? Stats can.
Well,
but someone has to go in there and.
Well, and dig it out.
And dig it out.
And also be able to separate it according to the information that we require yes. as an arts sector, because it wasn't necessarily separated yes. out that way when it was collected. Mm-hmm. So now there's been more yeah. Sort of more focused approach on finding yeah. out how much money people spend on cultural services and art in general. And, mm-hmm.
And anyway, I only so point more. That out because I always hear people say, well, I can't find any stats. And I think, well, the stat you're looking for might not actually exist. You might actually have to go out and,
yeah,
you know, use deductive reasoning to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, ready for this?
Yes,
so
I'm ready.
Lots of interesting pieces of information. So as level of education increases, most people's earnings increase.
Well, it would stand to reason.
It would stand yes. to reason. So it happens that as artists' level of education increases from no diploma, no certificate, through like high school, through apprenticeship, through college, and then university, and then a beyond university, right, beyond bachelor degree, the income level actually goes only from about $18,000 a year up to about $30,000 a year at the top,
mm-hmm.
top university educated. Whereas for the general labor force, going from the bottom is about $27,000 a year. So mm-hmm. it's already like $9,000 above what the average artist is getting with no certificate or diploma. And then it increases as you go through high school, apprenticeship, college, and then university. And at university, the average labor force worker is making $65,000 a year, whereas the artist is making $30,000. Mm-hmm. So they're making more than double at the same level of education. The average yes. labor force worker is making more than double
mm-hmm.
the average artist, mm-hmm. even though they have the same level of education.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting.
And I wonder if it's because not only does the artist have to do their art, they also have to develop their own market. Whereas if you're going as a laborer into an existing market, the conditions are pre-existing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there's you don't have to work as hard, right?
Yeah.
So your journey, you know, your roller coaster ride is steeper at the start.
Yeah.
Whereas artists kind of,
you know, they have to educate at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a hard haul.
Yeah. And educate their market as well as their themselves.
So now artists, when you break it down, there are a lot of different kinds of artists, right? I mean, we have artisans, craftspeople. Mm-hmm. We have musicians, dancers, conductors, choreographers, singers, you know, all the different people. So if you break it down by that.
Within
the art sector.
Yes.
Well, there's even like actors and comedians in here. And it's quite interesting. The lowest income is made by dancers. They make the lowest out of all the artists.
That makes sense.
And then there's kind of a big cluster right around 17,000 a year by artisans, craftspersons, musicians, singers, and visual artists, all around $17,000-$18,000 a year. And then it kind of goes up a little bit for authors and writers at about $37,000 a year. But the highest income earners in the art sector are producers, directors, and choreographers at about $51,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And well, I'd like to see them produce and choreograph
without the dancers
without the writers and without the artists.
Without the musicians.
Isn't that interesting?
That is very interesting. Yeah. Now, if you break that down again by gender, guess what? When you use all of those different professions and break it down into the percentage of female and the percentage of male that are in those professions, guess which profession has the most males?
Not the dancers.
No. It's the producers.
Of course it's the producers.
Directors, yes. Choreographers.
Eh?
The most men out of all of the professions.
Yeah.
So it happens that women make up the majority of the dancers.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, women are the lowest paid in the art sector and men are the highest paid in the art sector.
And that you could say that of
probably every sector.
I don't think there's any sector you couldn't actually say that.
That's true. Yeah. Inequality has been like, it's kind of blanket. But but this is drastic.
But it's more dramatic.
It's very dramatic. Mm-hmm. This could have been a dramatic moment.
It could have been a dramatic moment. But I think that's because, and again, it's all about the distribution chain.
Mm-hmm.
So all the money is in distribution. And I'm hopeful this will change one day, but right now it doesn't seem to be the case.
Tell me about the distribution
chain. Okay, so any step you have to go through to get from the producer to the consumer is called the distribution chain.
Okay.
And so in consumer goods, it's distributors, wholesalers, retailers, you know, manufacturers, distributors, wholesalers, retailers. Whereas, you know, in the arts, it can be eBay, it can be Netflix, it can be concert promoters, it can be so. The people who make the most money in the creative sector are the people who promote the content, not the people who make the content.
Mm-hmm.
The people who promote and deliver content.
Right.
Amazon, you know, it goes on and on and on. And so that's a bit disturbing because if you don't have content creators,
you have
nothing to promote.
yeah.
Or deliver.
So what can the consumer do to close the gap?
Well, pirate for one.
Yeah.
Right? Not pirating content would be a big one.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe not, you know, the race for the bottom. Everybody's about the how cheap can I get this DVD, this CD, this concert ticket for.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more recognition than, but it's like anything, the pendulum will swing and creators at some point will say, that's I've had about enough of that.
Yeah. Hopefully at some point.
Yeah. So the wider, the longer the distribution chain is, the less money the producer makes.
Right.
I think. Or the more money the consumer pays. It depends how you look at it. Right. So every time it goes through a dealer, distributor, wholesaler, retailer, it typically doubles in price.
Ugh.
So the closer you can get to the producer, the better value it is. Let's just say, I don't like that word cheap.
I know, but you don't want to say cheap.
Right?
Well, so it's a more efficient.
In terms of artists, the where the real value is, so if you're buying a book, try and buy it from the author directly at a book signing.
Yeah. Right?
Then you're cutting out the bookstore. Not that I don't like bookstores, but again, it's just the example.
Yeah.
Right? If you are going to an art opening and buying a piece, you know, try and buy it from the artist.
Mm-hmm.
If go to a CD release party, you know, that's more beneficial for the musician. Mm-hmm. So it's about getting closer to right? Yeah. Yeah. So then you think about, like, who else makes a ton of money in entertainment? Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
You know, go directly to the website of the act you want to see. And if you can cut out the middleman, they make more money. You get better value. I mean, yeah, you get better value because you're providing more money to the person creating the content.
Right, right. Because yeah, they pay usually 10% or 4% yeah, or something like that, oh, yeah, of every ticket exactly, sale through those ticket yeah, sellers.
Mm-hmm. Which so, is, you know, same thing goes, if not so much in the arts, but the farmer's market.
Yeah.
Is the very best example of getting as close to the producer as you can. Mm-hmm. So these are strategic. Just it's more. It's just you have to be really thoughtful about
yeah,
what you're doing. So if you go on Amazon and buy, say, a book that was published locally, well, by the time Amazon gets paid and everybody else the takes their cut, and, yeah, there's not going to be a lot left for the publisher, never mind the author. So,
right, because they're all under some kind of contract to sell at the same price.
Yes.
Right.
Well. Yes and no, but I mean, it's just, again, the sooner, if you can just phone up the author and say, hey,
I want your book.
I'd love a copy of your book.
Yeah.
Then you're really, you know, your yeah, money is making and a much more impactful.
Yeah. And without an expectation, you're going to get a special deal or anything.
Oh, no, no.
It's just that the producer actually makes more of that portion.
Yes.
Right. Or makes, yeah, the portion doesn't disappear to the dealer. Mm-hmm. The portion stays with the artist.
Yeah. If you're going to pay the same anyway,
yeah,
the sooner, the closer you can get, the better.
Right.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the more rewarding financially.
That's like the best argument for local everything.
Local everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave it up to somebody else to no, make your choices for you.
You know, so find oftentimes them, there will be CD release parties or mm-hmm, book launches or art gallery openings. I mean, that's and you can even, really affect a big change.
Yeah.
There.
And even
or
staying
coffee houses,
local, because I'm going to just stay this about the gallery. Yeah. Even staying local is still keeping more money in the hands of the artists. Even if you buy through a local dealer, because the gallery, as a public
oh,
gallery,
absolutely
doesn't charge very much commission. It's really low compared to a larger commercial gallery mm-hmm, that charges 50 or 60% of every piece, right? And our gallery is 25%, so it's not that bad. And same with as a publisher, right?
Like yeah,
you would be, as a publisher, selling, you know, not just entirely the money for the author, but for book production
oh,
too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's always that little piece, but the more you can keep it local, the more you're supporting local business, mm-hmm, local dealers, mm-hmm, local second.
Just think of it as little dollar bills with muscles on their arm.
Yes.
Bigger well, muscles.
It's your dollar.
Lots of big muscles. Yeah. But so there's a lot you can do too in terms of if you're on the end of developing programming.
Huh?
You know, so some of us consume arts programming
yeah,
and some of us develop.
Right.
Arts programming. So demographics can help us develop
oh, yeah, oh,
arts
definitely,
programming, right?
Yeah.
And so we, at the gallery, for example, there's 19, or the arts, District Arts Council, there's 19 programs.
Right.
So the big ones are the art gallery.
Well, the exhibition program, yeah, Family Saturday.
Family Saturday.
Wednesday on the Wharf.
Wednesdays on the Wharf.
Those are sort of our three biggest
yeah,
use programs.
Right?
So the ones we keep the best statistics on.
Mm-hmm. And we know who those people are.
Yes.
Right? And we can use demographics to target them more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably won't see many ads for Family Saturdays in the newspaper.
No, because we know where the families are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily newspaper readers.
Nope.
And they do get their information from, like, print information from the Leisure Guide
mm-hmm,
that the Recreation Society puts out. But mostly it's word of mouth.
Yes.
Posters.
Yes.
Flyers.
Yes.
And targeting them at early childhood events.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about
one-on-one.
Studying demographics
yeah,
and knowing where they
are. And knowing the behavior of those families
mm-hmm,
so that we can find them.
It's true. Young families don't read The Observer.
No.
But if you're trying to reach the business community and you're trying to garner sponsorship for shows that yeah, focus on young families or Family Saturdays, then you might go to the
right,
newspaper, because business opinion leaders also read The Observer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about who you're trying to reach and what else do they do to get their information.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can use postal codes because...
Oh, this is fascinating.
Yeah. So, yeah, and Canada's very forward. Our postal code system is like kicks butt.
Yeah.
Compared to some others in the world. So there's forward sorting and rear sorting.
So as much as you hate going capital and
yes,
B and then the number, as much as you hate that, it's a really good
yes,
system.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So forward sorts. So the first three well, number, digits. Letter, combination. Yeah. The first three digits identify province and region and town. And then the last three digits are more about the neighborhood. So forward sorting, backward sorting. It's very ingenious. Anyway, so all of this demographic, psychographic, geodemographics, what they've done is they've looked at where people live and their demographics, but also their lifestyle and their interest levels and how these people of similar lifestyles and values tend to cluster together. Okay. Right, so this goes back to the 60s. It was identified as a phenomenon. Anyway, the marketer people have run with it. Now they have a system. It's called the PRISM cluster system, and they've broken down the Canadian population into 66 clusters, and then they've identified where the target markets of each of those clusters by postal code. So you can enter in this program a postal code and then find out all about the people who live in that neighborhood.
Okay, do canoe.
Okay. All right, we're doing canoe.
We've all checked out our postal code that we grew up in and where we live now.
VOE 1VO. So canoe is identified. Their cluster is number 40. It's called Heartlanders. Mm-hmm. And the Heartlanders go, this says widely scattered in towns across Canada, Heartlanders consist of working class couples and retirees living in unpretentious houses and mobile homes. Am I right?
Yeah.
You've been to canoe, right? The aging population, 2/3 of maintainers are over 55 years old, tend to have high school and trade school diplomas, many, many trades in canoe, hold blue-collar service worker or agricultural jobs. So the agriculture piece doesn't really fit here. But, I mean, canoe has its own plymouth plant, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
If they haven't already retired, that's what they do, is blue-collar trades. Their rustic lifestyle, residents enjoy camping, gardening, and boating, has changed little in over a century, except the addition of multiple motorized vehicles. Properties are often cluttered with pickup trucks, powerboats, RVs, and snowmobiles. Again, very true. Lots
Bingo.
Of campers. Yeah. The members of this segment like to gather at farmers markets and pub restaurants. So shout out to The Hive, which is coming soon. We'll have our own pub restaurant to hash out the latest news. Or they go to Tim Hortons and have coffee, right? And their opinions are typically right of center. They are staunch supporters of national government and generally against premarital sex. I don't know why.
See, that had you pinned right up until the premarital sex.
Okay. Is there an answer to that? No, I can't get out of that one.
No. Except that I thought earlier said you were mostly opposed to postmarital.
Oh, no, sex. I was going to say, I bet you most people in canoe would say they're opposed to postmarital.
Okay.
Sorry, canoe.
So, yeah, that program is awesome.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
So now you know that if you're trying to reach VOE1VO or you're trying to reach
these people that like their snowmobiles and go to farmers markets and have gardens and cluster at the pub.
The Heartlanders.
Yeah, then you know where the Heartlanders are. You can find them by postal code and mail your thing to them.
Yes, directly to them.
Yes.
In now, unaddressed ad mail. So it's like 13 cents.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so you can reach all of canoe by unaddressed ad mail, go to our post office. It's $45.
Wow.
To reach the whole neighborhood.
Interesting.
So if you're having a snowmobile sale, right? Or you need a camper or an RV repair, and that would be where you would put that.
Yeah. So now,
and be way more effective than putting an ad in some other publication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I find interesting is how neighborhoods have changed, because when I asked you to put my postal code in where I grew up, because I grew up in Scarborough, and it was M1K4H3.
M1K4H3.
Yeah. And when I was growing up, it was, I think, a lot of lower middle class people, primarily white. But still, I went to school with a number of Jamaican families. There were a couple of Asian families, but still probably 70% white community. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a fairly high standard of living for the lower middle income. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had a lovely big lawn in our apartment building, a swimming pool, a playground. You know, everybody had a car. Yeah. Yeah. It seemed really We were right. We backed onto the school's property, so it was really close. We had a great school. I just felt like it was a great area to grow up
and
in.
And so it hasn't changed so much as shifted.
Yes.
So that generation would have gone out to the suburbs.
Right.
Right?
That was a long time ago,
happening.
I guess.
No, but that's what was happening.
Yeah.
Is they were building the highways out and the transit out. And now Toronto goes all the way to Barrie.
Yeah.
So crazy. I bet you there are a lot of M1K 4H3s living in Barrie right now.
Yeah.
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 That's where they would have ended up.
So now the neighborhood,
it's called Clustered Nests, upper middle class urban couples and multi-generational families. And it's highly ethnic centric.
So that would be lots of immigrant families.
Yes.
Upper middle class. Yes. So good, you know, like everybody's got, the fancy car and the vacation every year.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That certainly wasn't going on when I was there.
No. So demographic shifts. That's how it happens.
Yeah. So interesting. Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
What is this called? What is this postal code program called?
It's called the PRISM.
PRISM Cluster System.
PRISM Lifestyle.
Oh.
Look up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So cool.
It is 66 groups and you're in one of them. You're probably in more than one, but so if we're trying to develop arts programming or promote arts programming or
promote a specific exhibition.
Yes. Like promote a specific exhibition, say Cardiff and Miller. I know there are segments in Kelowna that would be very interested in Cardiff and Miller, but not all.
Yeah. That's true.
And if then finally, before the break, if you're trying to raise money, whether through granting processes or not, these, psychographics, demographics, geodemographics are critically important, right?
Right.
To identify these groups and then say to funders, this is who we're reaching with this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
because the government has segments they're trying to reach too.
Exactly.
Like
and funding agencies really like to see when you're engaging parts of the population that are not the standard. I mean, no offense, I love my wealthy seniors, but you need to not rely on your wealthy seniors to keep your organization going.
No.
You want to make sure you're engaging the entire community. Mm-hmm. And funders love to see that you're doing that and want to see proof.
Mm-hmm. So, and some governments have different priorities. Like the Conservative government is quite focused on seniors.
Mm-hmm.
Some seniors.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so some programs with that focus, and if you can show the demographics behind it, the odds of being funded are a great deal better.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So fascinating. Okay. Today that's been, it's just been a really interesting discussion. A person could talk about this for a very long time. Well, you could take a whole degree in this.
I know. And you might even pass. Maybe not the first time, but.
And now.
As the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
I still love that. Makes me happy to hear the dun, 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 dun. Because there's so much drama in the arts.
Yes, and in demographics.
There is.
So much drama.
Louise, take it away.
Yes.
The dramatic moment.
Okay, again, the dramatic moment, we had no way did we ever imply that it would be current or recent moments. But I think in light of today's topic, the dramatic moment is in 2010, they canceled the mandatory long form census.
Yeah, that was extremely sad.
Well, and it's so sad, not just moving forward, but also looking back. You're just messing with the data.
Yeah. Well, we can't rely on any data now beyond 2010. Yeah.
And you also kind of weaken the existing data.
Right.
Because from now on, you're going to have to say this is pre-long form census, this is post. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or post no long form census.
Yeah.
And so like if we keep a lot of stats at the Arts Center because it's very important, and it's almost like cutting out a bit and then expecting to be able to demonstrate the same.
Yeah. Then we wouldn't be able to show continuity.
No, it's growth. The continuity part.
Yeah.
And it's so critical to delivering the services the population needs.
Yeah. Well, I can give you an example. This is a tiny little example, but we had to close the gallery for 1 month to do the bathroom renovations.
Yes.
Right? It was May, 2009, 2010, 2011, somewhere in there. It's all a blur now. You should see how that messes with our statistics.
Yeah, we have to always put a little asterisk.
Yeah.
Bathroom renovations.
Yeah. It's awful because it shows our whole year. It changed our year. Like our attendance for the year, it showed a drop in attendance, whereas every other year showed a growth. right? Because we've been growing since, I think we've had consistent attendance growth since the beginning, but the biggest jumps have been in the last 6 years. So now we've got this little
I know, and you got to qualify that.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
What's the dip for?
Yeah. And it looks bad. It's like, oh, a drop in. What did you do wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I hate it. So anyway, yeah, that's a good example.
Right. And this is like the whole population.
Yeah.
The entire nation.
Oh.
Yeah.
It, can it ever, if it came back, do you think it can be recovered this time?
I don't know. Well, I guess you could, because it would only be a year, like if they brought it back. So it should have, last time was 2011. It should be 2015, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
So if maybe if,
if somebody else got
elected, it maybe would be 2016.
Yeah.
It's, so. And I mean, even like, it's, and it's not just the statisticians. I mean, I could see the statisticians saying, oh, you took our jobs away, you know?
Yeah.
And they're really crunching a lot of numbers. And there's, it's voluntary. I mean, you can still, but it's not the same rigorous data.
Yeah.
Right? That determines everything. Transit dollars, road dollars, healthcare dollars. I mean, it's so critical. I just feel like you're taking the toys in the sandbox away. Like, how are we supposed to negotiate a healthy common future if we don't have the numbers? What, why are we afraid of the numbers?
We're not afraid of the numbers. No? I think that the people in power want to not share the knowledge. I think they, if the common person knew, if the common person knew all of those, all that information, we would demand different things, right?
We probably would.
But we don't even know. And but, so you're sitting in your neighborhood, you go to work every day, you drive your car, everything's fine. And so we don't need to worry about anything.
The government can do whatever they want. Ignorance is bliss.
It is.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Apathy is becoming rampant.
Well, I would, I guess one message today was get on Stats Canada and check it out, man. There is so much cool stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a numbers guru. You just kind of got to zoom around there and type National Household Survey and whatever community you're from or want to be from or are from or used to be from. And you find out all kinds of fascinating stuff, like weird stats. Like in Fort McMurray, do you know what the average household value is?
No, what?
$650,000.
What?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's
insane. And it's like 250. I mean, that is significant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Oh, my gosh.
It just blows me away.
Yeah. So it's more, it's like reading the dictionary.
It is. It's like the farmer's almanac. Like,
I did not know that.
Yeah. And some towns, like one, I just finished a project recently and we did a study, a comparative study of a number of communities. And then one thing that, so sometimes what you think you want and what you actually want don't really mesh up. Like the stats, you know, stats don't lie. They don't have emotions.
They're, that's right.
You know, they don't have hidden agendas. So there was one thing where some members of the community were saying, we wish we had more. We wish we had comparatively, again, more shopping compared to our other neighbors in this community. And then when you look at the actual, you compare both communities, the community with less shopping choices had a better household income and better employment.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Because retail puts a downward trend on average income.
Right. Of course so, it does.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in
and those, then people leave to go to other, right? So it totally messes up.
Well, the, and that's a service. That's a service sector.
Yeah.
And people make less money in service. And so if there's more retail stores, then there's more people employed in low income jobs.
Yeah. And so it really is about compromise. You can't, I mean, go again, go on Stats Canada. You can't have it all.
Yeah.
But the important thing is you have the thing that really matters to you. Like in the Shoe Swap, we have, well, Sam and I particularly, our doctor-patient ratio is very high. And we're super lucky.
We are. Way, right? Well, I hear stories. It's quite terrible in other cities.
You know, maybe the retail sector isn't as developed as we'd like. But in the grand scheme of things, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes I look around and think, how many choices do people need?
Yeah.
For Pete's sake, I go downtown. There's, you know, there's 100 stores downtown.
Well,
there's,
I mean,
there's 50 stores in the malls.
And it isn't even about need. It's just, it is about need, but it's also about realizing that all of these things are interconnected.
Yeah.
Right. So, People talk about, say, the price of fuel or gas prices. Mm-hmm. When they're too high, we complain because we feel like we're being gouged. On the other hand, when they're low, what do? Get in our cars and drive to Kelowna.
Yeah.
So either way, it's the, again, the big aquarium kind of mm-hmm. shifts a little bit. So we think we want cheaper. I think what we're saying is we want fair prices, but we have to know when there's imbalance, it will eventually balance out, and it might not actually balance out the way you thought that it would.
Right.
Right. Because plunging oil prices has not been great for salmon arm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But the price of gas is cheaper. So, you know, you got to take your knocks.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So here's an interesting thing, though. I was having a conversation with somebody about the feeling that you get when you get something on sale.
Yes.
And the feeling is the same as when you get something cheaper. And it's why people will drive all over town mm-hmm. to save a dollar on a head of cabbage or something.
Dopamine.
Right? Yeah, that's sure what it is. Dopamine. It's winning.
Yeah.
You get the feeling from when you win, like if you're playing a lottery game or a slot machine.
Which is why some clusters like to gamble.
Yes. But it's the same feeling when you save money. So, because it always confused me why people would spend $5 in gas to go and save $2 on something out, you know, 3 kilometers from town. Mm-hmm. And it's just because of that dopamine.
Yeah. And we're very habitual human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have these patterns and these triggers and hormones and, you know, it's deep psychology.
Yeah.
And you can use demographics to better connect with that person's psychology, and that we're all in different little clusters and we all have different little behaviors, and really all of that intersecting is what really makes community happen. I mean, I just find it fascinating.
It is.
Yeah.
It's totally fascinating. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Okay. We have a few minutes to talk about.
Speaking of fascinating, there's tons of interesting things happening.
Yeah.
Especially with March break coming up.
Yeah. Well, that is kind of exciting. I don't know about you, but I love the 2-week vacation from making lunches.
Oh man. Cannot wait.
So spring break is coming. We just spent last week setting up the new exhibition at the gallery.
Yes.
Puppets, Peonies, and Community Plays, The Art of Engagement by Kathy Stubbington. And it was an amazing opening on Friday night. A whole bunch of Runaway Moon Theater people
it's
came out.
It's stunning, and that colors
and the scale
puppets.
Of things.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Giant
everything
puppets.
From teeny tiny
teeny,
little
tiny
Murray
yes.
all the way up to the big giant from by the river. Beautiful, beautiful work. So we're very fortunate to have somebody as brilliant as Kathy within our area. And she is coming to do a couple of events at the gallery this month. So this Saturday, actually, Christy, her wonderful dancer friend, who's been involved with many Runaway Moon projects, is coming to have a Runaway Moon Day at the gallery.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yay!
So she'll be there. I think she's going to teach a bee dance because there's the honeybee calendar there.
Oh, like bzz, bzz, bee?
Yeah, like the waggle dance, you know? And it's kind of just a Runaway Moon theme day.
Yeah.
You know, just stuff and making puppets, finger puppets and stuff like that. So, and Family Saturdays, our demographic for Family Saturdays, are families of children between the ages of 2 and 9.
Married, unmarried.
Yeah.
School age, preschool.
Preschool
age,
so, and elementary
That's
school
age. That's
actually
two different.
That is different. Yeah. Well, and this is an interesting shift that we've experienced at Family Saturdays. When the program started in 2005. It was geared towards 8 to 12-year-olds.
Yes.
Because that was a sort of age that was appropriate to come to the gallery to see the exhibition, but to also want to do something hands-on.
Yes, yeah.
And then it started getting younger and younger. And for me, it was like, yeah, whatever. My kids were very young at the time too, right? I wanted to make sure that the gallery was a welcoming place for families. So give them something to do while they're there, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's just gotten so young. People are bringing like 2 and 3-year-olds to do this, but it's so great because the families are being creative together. Even if the thing that they create isn't, you know, a work of art, it's just the act of being creative together that has brought them, you know, into the space, into that community, and made them feel like there's a place for all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So anyway,
wonderful.
It is an interesting shift in demographics. Anyway,
not a change. It's a shift.
Not a change. Yeah. And then Art Immersion is the Spring Break Monday that we often have during spring break at the gallery. So that's on Monday, March 23rd. And that is geared for kids age 9 to 15 because that's a bit more intense. That's actually puppet making, paper mache puppet making, and some other things that Kathy herself will be leading. So if you want to register for that, it's only $25 for the day. And register for that at the gallery. We have registration forms, or you can just email me.
That's like learning, you know, art from the masters.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we're unbelievably lucky mm-hmm. to have her here, and imagine being that age and having the opportunity to learn something from Kathy. I want to make a self-portrait puppet.
Oh.
Yeah, because yay. Murray MacDonald yes. has his own puppet. He's
he does?
In the gallery. So does Kathy, right? Oh. Like, you can see them. You look at those puppets and go, oh yeah, that
I
looks
think
just
it's
like
time.
Them.
I think it's time. A selfie puppet.
Selfie puppet. It's just natural, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Evolution. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, all sorts of events. And of course, the artist talk is on March 19th. And Kathy will be there to do a talk and a little bit of a demo, which is wonderful. So an excellent March thing coming up here. It's really fantastic. Yes. Lots of opportunities. So you can find out more on the website, www.salmonarmartcenter.ca. And you can check our Facebook page, which I tend to use a lot because my demographic says that they actually look and find
engaged
out about
social media.
Yeah, yes. That they actually look on the day of events to find out what's happening. Mm-hmm. So Facebook page, Salmon Arm Arts Center, mm-hmm. Or you can follow me on Twitter.
Yes.
SAAG Curator.
That's a whole other demographic.
That is.
You're hitting all kinds of demographics.
I'm trying, except I'm not on Instagram.
Well, that's okay.
Or Snapchat.
We'll get there.
That's a little beyond me.
Yeah.
But there's all kinds
Nothing is beyond you.
Well, it's, you know, a person only has so many hours in the day,
this
right?
This is true.
So that was fascinating.
Wow, that went by fast.
Yeah. Our demographic radio listeners probably are looking at their watches right now saying, oh, it's time for 11z's.
That's right.
Time for my mid-morning breakfast coffee break.
That's right.
So
thank
we should...
you for being our demographic.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe they're coffee buyers, too.
Ooh.
That's all I'm thinking about
yes.
right now.
Oh, yeah. Coffee time.
Thanks for joining us. See you next week.
Bye now.